Hi everyone, you are on with John. I just want to start by saying that I usually record episodes at night, and it's usually less busy outside at nighttime, but I'm recording during the day right now, and I live literally right across the street from a hospital. So if you hear sirens and trucks and craziness, that is what's happening. So on today's episode, the main topic I want to get into is human trafficking, and more specifically, child trafficking, both sex trafficking and labor trafficking of children. And the reason I want to talk about this is because it's an issue that I feel we don't talk about enough, but it's big enough that it should be talked about more. And this issue was actually briefly and somewhat in the news. Maybe a week ago, because there was a news story that broke, and the government's official press release said that U.S. Marshals fined 39 missing children in Georgia during Operation Not Forgotten. That was the news story. And it was reported by the Associated Press, the New York Times, and many other news outlets. They were tweeting it. It was all over the place. But not on any, I didn't see it on any cable news shows or on any TV broadcasts. I didn't see anyone talking about it on TV. I saw the stories being tweeted out and being shared on social media, but I didn't actually see it talked about. Maybe I missed it, or maybe nobody talked about it. I don't know which one it is. And when I saw that headline, there was someone who tweeted, "How is this not the biggest story in America right now?" And I agreed with that. When I saw this headline, I was like, "Why is nobody talking about this?" And then I found this article on the Huffington Post where the author claims that this story wasn't the big sex trafficking sting that it was made out to be. And I don't know the author's name, I don't remember it. But he said that Operation Not Forgotten was not a designated anti-trafficking operation, but rather an operation intended to locate 78 critically missing children, which means they could be at risk for trafficking, but they could also be at risk of parental abuse or have medical conditions that make their recovery more urgent. And in the operation, Operation Not Forgotten, U.S. Marshals found 65 of the 78 critically missing children, and of those 65, 39 were recovered. So the headline about the 39 children was about the 39 that were recovered, which means they were removed from whatever situation they were in, which could have been trafficking, or it could have been that they were with an abusive parent or with a parent who didn't have custody of them. Or in the article on the Huffington Post, the author says they could have just been staying with a friend. Now, I don't buy that. I highly doubt that those missing children were just staying with friends. But that is what the author in the Huffington Post article said, so that is why I'm sharing that. Now, the other 26 cases were closed without the child being recovered, which means they could have been found by another agency like Child Protective Services, or they had just been home all along. Again, that is what the author of the Huffington Post article said. I also don't buy that 26 children were either found first by another agency, and that's why the US Marshals didn't find them, or they were just home. I mean, that sounds crazy to me. So I understand that this is not the big sex trafficking sting that it was made out to be at first, but I think the truth lies somewhere in between that big news story and what this Huffington Post author is saying. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle of those two, because sure, maybe it's not the big sting that it was made out to be, but you can't tell me that these children were just with their friends, or they were actually home, or they were with parents who didn't have custody. I don't buy that all of those kids were in one of those situations. I do think some of them were being trafficked. Now, I don't have the proof of that. No one's given us the proof of that, and I don't think we'll ever get the proof of that, because there is some strange vibe around child trafficking, both in this country, in the United States, and in the world, that people, especially people in power, don't want to talk about it. Now, I mean, sidebar here, I am in school, I'm in grad school for broadcast journalism. So when I'm talking about subjects, I have researched them, I've looked into them. I try to give my opinion on the subject without really taking sides when I can. I try to be as open-minded as I can be about issues. But this is an issue that I don't see as political, and there is clearly one good side to be on, and that is the side of the children. So I have no problem saying and feeling that we are not getting the full story from the people in charge. I don't necessarily know if the U.S. Marshals are telling the complete truth. I don't know if our government is telling the complete truth. And the author of the Huffington Post article, I mean, he shed some light on the situation by saying, you know, not all of these kids were trafficked, which is great. I'm happy he did his research. But you can't tell me that we have all these children in this country and in our world missing because they want to be, because they're with a friend, because they are on the run, because they are with a parent who doesn't have custody of them. I highly doubt that that is the likely story. I am inclined to believe that a lot of these children who are missing are being trafficked, whether it be labor trafficking, you know, like trafficking children to work, or sex trafficking. No matter which one it is, I'm more inclined to believe that that's what's happening here. And the people with power and the people who are telling us what's happening, they're not telling us the full story, or maybe they're not telling us any of the story. You know, this is, I don't want to tie these two things together, but as I'm talking, this just made me think of something else, where there was this story, I don't know if it was a few weeks ago or a few months ago, time is just kind of all blurring together right now, but either a few weeks ago or a few months ago, there was this story about people seeing government officials or police officers, I don't remember what it was, don't quote me on it. I don't have notes on this. I didn't look it up. Again, this is just a thought that just came to me while I was talking. But they found a van of children being released. And what was that about? Why did nobody look into that? Why did nobody dig into that further and research that and try to figure out what was going on there? Is it because the people in power and the government officials in power know what's going on and don't want to fix it? Are they possibly a part of the problem? Do they know where some of these children are and they're keeping quiet on purpose? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say that's what I think is happening. I'm not going to sit here and just throw out conspiracy theories like that, but it is something to think about because we have a child trafficking problem in our world and it seems that no one wants to talk about it. So any reasonable person has to ask themselves why. Why do people not want to talk about it? Why do the people on TV, why do the government officials not want to talk about it? If it's an issue, which it is, and it's a serious issue, why are they so quiet about it? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think anyone knows the answer to that question except those people that I'm talking about. And I did look into this issue a little bit more because it, again, it's an issue that we need to be talking about more, and I don't think anything's going to change if we just keep letting it fly. So on worldschildren.org, one of the stats on their website is that nearly 4 million children in the world are trafficked for either labor or sex. 4 million. So you're going to tell me there are 4 million children going missing and nobody knows where they are? Absolutely not. Somebody knows where they are. People know where they are. And I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent here, but I tend to do that because I a lot of times I think of other things as I'm speaking that I wasn't planning on saying. So again, I'm not trying to tie too many things together, but another thought that I just had as I'm talking is, you know, the whole thing with Jeffrey Epstein and the child sex trafficking that he was involved in. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jeffrey Epstein met with and was, how do I want to say this? I don't think it's a coincidence that Jeffrey Epstein knows and has met with powerful people and rich people such as President Trump, President Clinton. I feel, as an outsider looking in, just like most of us are, I feel like there are too many powerful and rich people just in society and in government who are tied to these kind of things. And I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, and Bill Clinton, President Clinton, has said that, you know, he has no ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Donald Trump has said he doesn't really know the guy. I don't buy it from anyone. I think there is something greater happening in the world, but especially in the United States, where the people in power know about very dark things happening in our communities that they are a part of. Again, I don't want to get all crazy conspiracy theory because that's not what I do on this podcast. I try to bring news with some opinion from a reasonable standpoint after I've done research. That is what I try to do here. But in this situation and in this with this issue of child sex trafficking specifically, there's just so much silence around it that I can't help but start to make up my own theories. Because when people don't give you answers, you tend to make up your own. And so if the government and powerful people don't want us making up our own stories about them, then I think they should start speaking. And another website that I went on was unicefusa.org. And on a stat on their website was that the National Human Trafficking Hotline statistics show a 25% jump in human trafficking from 2017 to 2018, which includes both sex and labor trafficking. And another quote from their website is that of more than 23,000 runaways reported to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in 2018, 1 in 7 were likely victims of child sex trafficking. 1 in 7. So another side thought that I had when I read that stat, and I did take a few notes on this one, not a lot, but a few, is the timeline, 2017 to 2018. Child sex trafficking and just human trafficking in general has been an issue for a long time. It's an ongoing issue that nobody wants to talk about, really. But the reason 2017 to 2018 sticks out at me is because, and again, I don't want to tie all these things together, but 2017 to 2018, we have President Trump in office. And in September of 2018, Senator Kamala Harris was questioning ICE Executive Associate Director Matthew Albence, I think that's how you say his name, I'm not sure, at a Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs hearing. And during that hearing, there was a portion of it where Kamala Harris was questioning him about missing children at the border, which resulted in child sex trafficking charges. And you can go look up this video on YouTube. I'm sure all you have to Google is Kamala Harris questions ICE Executive Associate Director, and it'll come up. And in that video, in the hearing, the Executive Associate Director of ICE, Matthew Albence, admits that there was a specific number of missing children cases at the border that did result in sex trafficking cases that he is aware of. So he admitted that on tape. It's there for everyone to see. But once again, that did not make big headlines. And I think it should have. Because, so now you're saying you have someone working for ICE under the Trump administration who is aware of missing children cases resulting in sex trafficking cases, and he said nothing about it. And then once again, you have Donald Trump, who knew and met with Jeffrey Epstein. And you have Bill Clinton, who also knew and met with Jeffrey Epstein. And both these men, Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, were both, one is and one was, president of the United States. So you're telling me these people in government, these powerful, rich people, don't know what's going on? I do not buy it. There are too many coincidences that connect everything. I mean, just connect the dots here. Connect the dots. You have all these missing children. You have people in ICE confirming that some of these missing children cases have resulted in sex trafficking cases under a Trump administration. Trump knew Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein also knew Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was also president. So it is just an ongoing cycle of people in power keeping these dark secrets hidden. And I think it's absurd and it needs to be brought to light. And this is one of those issues that I have no problem giving my full opinion on, because like I said earlier, there's a clear good side to be on here, and that is the side of the children. I don't care politically what side of the aisle the abusers are on, or what side of the aisle the powerful people are on. If powerful people know that this is happening and have stayed quiet and continue to stay quiet, they all deserve to be brought down. All of them. And that is something that I'm not going to change my mind on. So that pretty much sums up the main points I wanted to make on human trafficking, but more specifically, children trafficking, both labor trafficking and sex trafficking. That pretty much sums it up. It's just an issue that I feel really needs to be tackled and talked about. I don't understand how this is not already a big issue that we're talking about, because we are in the middle of, all over the world, but especially in the United States right now, we are in the middle of civil unrest like we have not seen in years. And we are in, we are seeing changes and protests and activism in a way that we haven't seen in so long, because people want all of the bad to change. People want racial equality. People want gender equality. People want the powerful people doing bad things to finally pay for their actions. And so I don't understand how in a time of Me Too and Time's Up and racial equality, I don't understand how in this time that we're in, this revolution that we're in, I don't understand how this is not a part of it, how child sex trafficking is not a part of it. If we're going to fight for women's rights and the rights of gay people and the rights of queer people and the rights of brown and black people in this country, we need to fight for our children too. Because what sucks more than any of it is that our children in this country can't fight for themselves. You can't have children protesting in the streets when the adults in charge of them are letting these things happen. We need to be the voices and the fighters for the children, not only in this country, but in our world. And if we as the adults are not going to stick up for our children, then we are cowards. And that is where I stand on that. And speaking of cowards, I'm going to take a quick break, but when I come back, I'm going to give an update on what I've been watching. I'm going to give an update on The View, but, you know, speaking of cowards, I'm also going to be talking about Joe Rogan and his desire to host a presidential debate and why I think that is a terrible idea. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, welcome back. So Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan, he, for anyone who doesn't know who he is, which I'm sure most people do, he was, I mean, what I know him from is he was the host of Fear Factor a long time ago. And now he has a podcast. He talks about social issues, political issues. And he threw the idea out there that he would like to moderate a 4-hour debate, no stops, no commercials, between Joe Biden and President Trump. And the response to that has been pretty divided, I think. And I definitely fall on the side of, I think that's a terrible idea. The plus side to someone like Joe Rogan hosting, or moderating a debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump is that it would get the younger audience, which both of these men running for president this year need. They need younger people to be excited about them, because I don't think young people are very excited about either of them. So I think having a very popular podcast host moderate a debate would be a good thing, because it would get the eyes and ears that these politicians need. It's a new form, not necessarily new, but a somewhat new form of media that I don't think politicians have taken advantage of yet. However, I don't think Joe Rogan is the right podcaster to moderate a debate, because, one, I do think people with a journalism background should moderate debates. Maybe I'm biased because I'm going to school for journalism, but I do think someone who has the goods to back up their being at a presidential debate, because I feel like being at a presidential debate as the moderator is an honor and is a very serious matter, that someone, I feel like the person who does it has to have the chops, and they have to have the ability to do that job. And I think people with a journalism background and news background are the best options for that job. So maybe someone with a journalism background who also has a podcast would be a good person to moderate a debate. But the reason, there are plenty of reasons why Joe Rogan's not the right person. One is, in today's climate, I don't see how he could be a viable person to do this. I don't see it happening, by the way. Maybe in Joe Rogan's dreams, but I don't see it happening. But Joe Rogan has used the N-word many times. It is on tape for everyone to hear. I know we live in a time where sometimes even when you hear something with your own ears on tape, you choose not to believe it if it fits your political leanings. But he has said it on tape. I don't think in the climate we're in that he could get away with being a moderator at a presidential debate, not with language like that. He also has made transphobic comments. And he has also, you know, going back to the whole child sex trafficking thing, he has had sexual predators on his show, and he's given them a platform. And I have watched his podcast. I've watched episodes of his podcast, and I've seen men on there say disgusting things about young women. You can't do that. I mean, it was never okay. That behavior was never okay. But especially now in almost 2021, after Me Too and Time's Up, no, you don't get to do that. It just makes me so, it honestly aggravates me that someone like Joe Rogan would even throw his name in the ring. You are not deserving of moderating a presidential debate. You don't have the chops. You don't have the experience. You didn't go to school for anything relating to politics or news or anything. You know, there are people who work hard their entire lives in news and researching and in law. Those people are the ones who deserve the honor of moderating a presidential debate, not the host of Fear Factor. And the fact that Donald Trump promoted the idea of Joe Rogan moderating the debate doesn't sit well with me either, because the moderator of the debates is supposed to be, they're not supposed to show favoritism. They're supposed to be in the middle. They're supposed to just do their job, ask the questions, and be tough on both candidates. I think Joe Rogan has expressed some favoritism towards Donald Trump. So how is that fair? I mean, we cannot accept the premise that anyone who disagrees with President Trump is fake news. We cannot accept that as Americans or as the world. We cannot accept that everything is fake news unless Donald Trump supports it. And it feels like that's the direction we're going in. And that cannot be the way. We will not let that be the way. You know, the President of the United States does not get to decide who is real media, who are real journalists, and who isn't. That is not up to the president, okay? So, again, while I think using a podcast host would be a smart thing to get younger voters involved, Joe Rogan's not the guy. He is not the guy. And Joe Rogan, I highly doubt you listen to my podcast because I'm a nobody compared to you. But if you happen to, I just want you to know that you are a disgusting human being. I'm just going to say it. Disgusting. And the fact that you would even try to throw your name into the ring to moderate a presidential debate is comedic. Sit down, Joe. And now, man, hold on. Let me take a sip of my coffee here. Okay. Now, on to some lighter stuff. What I've been watching. So I've been very busy. I think I said that on my last episode. I've been very busy. I have a full-time job. I'm a full-time grad student. I'm living on my own in my own apartment for the first time. I have a cat. I have a fish. I have plants. I'm stressed, okay? But when I am not busy doing work or school or dealing with animals, I do like to watch things on Netflix, as everyone knows who's listened to my podcast. And what I've been watching recently, or what I've watched most recently, because I haven't really had too much time for TV, but what I've watched recently is I watched The Great Hack on Netflix, which goes into how Cambridge Analytica played a big part in the Brexit vote in the UK, as well as getting President Trump elected here in the United States. And I think that anyone who is still asking themselves, how did this happen? You need to watch The Great Hack, because it does a fantastic job of clearly showing you how we ended up in the situation we're in today. You know, because if you think back to 2016, nobody thought President Trump would win. Nobody thought 4 years later we'd be talking about President Trump. But we're here. And I think The Great Hack does a good job of showing how it happened. Because I was one of those people who was blindsided in 2016. I was one of those people who naively thought Hillary had it in the bag. There's no way on election night we're going to have President Donald Trump. And so over these past 4 years, I've been doing my research, I've been looking into it, I've been doing my reading to figure out what happened. How did we end up here, and how did half the country not see what was coming? And I think The Great Hack does a good job of explaining that in part. And then another show that I watched on Netflix is called The Inbetweeners. It's this coming-of-age comedy that follows these four high school friends from the UK. And it's an older series. I think it's from 2010. I'm not sure. But it's like this hidden gem on Netflix that just happened to be trending one night. And I watched it, and it's short episodes. They're like 20 minutes. There's like two or three seasons. And it's just, I don't know, it's a feel-good, funny show. Especially if you are stressed in life like I am. If you want a feel-good, funny show, The Inbetweeners is definitely where it's at. And now for a quick update on The View, because anyone who has listened to previous episodes of my podcast know that I love The View, and I like to give updates on my opinions on The View. Which, by the way, side note, I had a conversation with one of my friends, and, you know, he said to me, you can't get your news from The View. You know, it's a very liberal show. And I just want to put it out there that I don't watch The View to get my news. I watch The View because I'm a fan of the show, always have been, and I watch it for entertainment. They happen to talk about the news, but, oh, there's the sirens that I told you have been happening. I watch The View for entertainment. They talk about the news, and they give their opinions on it, but that's not how I form my opinions. I am an independent thinker. I'm not going to watch five people talk and then develop my opinion based on them. One of them might reflect my opinion, which does happen a lot because we're human. That's what happens. But I'm not looking to The View or to any show for my opinion or for my news. I do my own research, I think for myself, and I develop my own opinions. So I just want to throw that out there. When I'm talking about The View, I'm talking about The View as a fan of the show, of the series, from the beginning. I'm not talking about it as a news show that I go to as my source of news, just to make that clear. So, The View news, The View update. The View came back September 8th for season 24. Sarah Haynes did return, so that leak about her returning turned out to be true, just like most of the leaks that come out of that show. Whoever that leaker is knows their stuff. And there is this, just side note again, there is this woman, she's a blogger on YouTube, who talks about The View. Oh, what's her name? Kay Sherrell. Her name's Kay Sherrell. She has a blog about The View, and she vlogs about it on YouTube. So shout out to her. Give her a listen if you like The View. She's very interesting. But she has this theory. I don't know if she still does, but she has had this theory that Joy Behar is the leaker because the leaks have happened for the entirety of the show. I don't buy it. You know, I don't think it's Joy. I feel like it has to be someone from, like, hair and makeup or someone from the production crew. I don't think any of the on-screen talent is the leaker because all of them have too much to risk. I mean, I wouldn't risk a job like that just to leak news stories about The View. Absolutely not. So I feel like the leaker has to be someone behind the scenes. I don't think it's Joy. So I have to disagree with Kay Sherrell on that one. Another shout-out I want to give is the Deja The View podcast. I always mean to give them a shout out. I may have, I don't remember. But when I started my podcast and I started thinking about what I wanted to do for a podcast, one of my ideas was, oh, maybe I'll have a podcast about The View. It's my favorite show. I'll talk about The View. And then I realized that that exists already. That's Deja The View, which is hosted by Kevin and Marie and sometimes Sean. And I didn't want to, like, step on them, you know? How many podcasts do you really need about The View? Come on. But Kevin and Marie on Deja The View Pod, they do it well. They do it very well. So I want to give them a shout out. They are hilarious. I want to be a guest on their podcast very badly. I have made that known to Kevin. So here's to hoping that happens. And if either of you, Kevin or Marie, if you're listening to this, please have me on your podcast. But yeah, shout out to them because they talk about The View the best. And I guess that is a thing, being the best at talking about The View, but it's them. So if you like The View, they are another podcast that you should listen to. But back to my View update, or just how I'm feeling about The View this season. Sarah Haynes is back. I'm very happy she's back. Something that Kevin and Marie were talking about on their podcast is how the vibe is different and Sarah seems different and she has gotten into some spats with the other co-hosts, which didn't really happen a lot. You know, Sarah, no one ever really challenged Sarah on her opinions the first time she was on the show. And she was usually the middle ground person who brought some common sense, some light, some levity. And everyone loved her. Everyone usually, not, they didn't always agree with her, but Sarah's opinions were always respectable enough that there was nothing to argue with her on. She's a pretty middle ground person. She's very fair. She's very likable. But this time around, she has ruffled some feathers, which was surprising. I was not expecting that. She has kind of sided with Megan a lot more than she did the first time around. But I'm okay with that. Again, the point of The View is to watch these ladies discuss their different points of view. It's not fun if everyone agrees. And any true fans of The View want different viewpoints. Any true fans of the show want a Meghan McCain. They want an Elizabeth Hasselbeck. They want Sunny Hostin, Whoopi, and Joy. We want to see these ladies fight about their opinions and then talk about their kids in the next segment. You know, that's what true fans of the show want. So I'm loving it as usual. This is honestly my favorite panel since the panel that was Whoopi, Joy, Sherry, Elizabeth, and Barbara. I think this panel, Whoopi, Joy, Sunny, Sarah, and Megan, is the best panel the show has had since then. So I'm loving it. Their ratings are good. I really can't wait for them to get back in the studio, but Whoopi and Joy made it clear that they will not be back in that studio until it is completely safe to do so. And Whoopi, maybe never. Maybe Whoopi will just stay home forever because she seems very happy there. But I can't wait for them to be back in the studio because, you know, I've said this before, but this format of The View from home, any show from home, it's hard to have real, genuine conversations when there's a delay and you have to be careful about not talking on top of each other. You know, so this format where each lady gets her, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever, to give her point of view, 2 minutes, please. It's more like a minute, 30 seconds. I don't know why I said 2 or 3 minutes. But when each lady is given her time to speak and then they have to move on, that's not how conversation works, you know? So that's the part of the show that I miss. I miss, you know, Whoopi saying something and then Megan jumping on that and then Joy jumping at Megan. You know, I miss the banter and the back and forth and, you know, the conversations sparking new ideas in one of the other hosts. That's the part of the show that I miss. But it's still my favorite show. They're still doing their thing and they're still fantastic at it. So I can't wait to see who fills in for Megan when she's on maternity leave, because we need a conservative on the show, especially during an election season. You know, it's unfortunate. I'm very happy for Megan and her unborn child and her husband. But it's a really rough time for her to go on maternity leave because, you know, the election seasons on The View are what, so they're the part that the fans love, you know, those are the parts that keep the show entertaining. So they need to make sure that they have conservatives filling in for Megan while she's not there, because it's an election season and we need it. Well, that's it for me today. To all of you listening, thank you. And I do mean that. My podcast has been getting a bump in viewership or listens, I guess, lately, and I'm not sure why. I don't know what's happening. I haven't really been promoting it, but it's been picking up. So it's just a cool thing to know that you guys are listening and you do want to hear what I'm saying. Because I'm someone who, you know, my whole life, especially in high school and college, I was and still am very interested in social issues and politics and news, but no one around me was ever really into it. So getting to have this podcast where I come on and give my thoughts and to have people actually listen is so cool. So thank you. I hope you continue to support my show, and I will talk to you all next month.